Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Ann Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers for Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of my wonderful co-hosts with me today. First up, he might not be a lore writer, but gosh, he knows a lot about lore. That'd be Joe Perez. Hey, Joe, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. I could be better, but that's okay. It's daylight savings really messed me up.
Yeah, so, no, it definitely throws me for a loop.
Yeah, it does, like every time, because it's getting dark so early that it throws off my whole day. It's really weird. Anyway, we've also got our other lore focused writer here with us and co-host as well. He's back from BlizzCon and California in general. That'd be Matt Rossi. Hey, Rossi, how's it going
today? Edmonton has been the coldest place on earth.
Wow. Well, you're like way up north too.
Yep.
Isn't there like an Arctic freeze or something that's going to be going on or something like that?
The low today was like negative 20 around 9 a.m. It's actually going up right now. I think it's about negative 14.
Oof.
This is Celsius in Fahrenheit temperatures. I can actually translate this for you thanks to a push of a button. Right now, it was negative 4 at the coldest, negative 4 Fahrenheit. And right now, it's 9 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's
how cold it is here.
Super,
I'm gonna go with the thanks. I hate it.
Yeah, no.
I have not actually been outside today, nor do I hope to, because it's cold enough that I don't even want to walk my dog. I'm like, go ahead, poop on the rug. I don't care. It's too cold for you to go outside.
Oh,
I don't care if we put you a little suit on you. No. When it's negative 4 Fahrenheit outside.
Yeah.
I'm used to negative temperatures here. I'm used to low negative temperatures here, but when it starts getting into low negative Fahrenheit temperatures, that's when you stop, because
Tiny, she's just a little gal too.
Even with our big dogs, we have puppy pads for emergencies for that reason, for either like 10 feet of snow or if it's that cold.
Yeah.
That's we have them as well for that reason. But yeah. Well, so that's been last week, I was flying back here and I was leaving a place that was 80 degrees Fahrenheit. And today I'm negative 4 degrees Fahrenheit today. So it's been quite the week.
This is why I always liked going to BlizzCon, because it was my one last flash of warm before the winter hit. Because it was like, go to Anaheim, soak up the sunshine, enjoy the heat, because I'm not going to feel anything close to it again for probably 4 to 5 months. Anyway, speaking of BlizzCon, so last week we talked a little bit about the lore announcements and stuff that came out at BlizzCon, Rossi. So we talked Shadowlands, we talked Overwatch 2 a little bit. We briefly touched on Diablo, but we didn't go too far into it because, honestly, we really wanted you here for this one. Partially because you know everything Diablo, and partially because
You were in Diablo 3. You were the barbarian, right?
No, he was in Diablo Immortal as the barbarian, I believe. We wanted to hear your take on what's going on here, because we were super impressed that you managed to call pretty much all of this a couple of weeks ago, which was fantastic. So I want you to talk about what's going down in Diablo 4 for people who have played Diablo 3 and got to the end. Where is the story going from here?
Actually, let's not bother. I'm kidding.
Okay.
I thought you both were like, I just wanted to, I can't see your faces, but I can see your face.
I had this expression of shock on my face, like, wait, what? No, we wanted to hear you talk. We saved this for you, Rossi.
First off, let me say, I did call it, and I do have a little bit of the fist pump thing going, but at the same time, it wasn't that hard to call, because they basically kind of telegraphed it when they did that comic last year that they ended up not doing when they did the announcements for it, and they have Lilith on the cover art for it. It's sort of like, okay, that's a big clue. I think a lot of people missed it somehow, and I'm not sure how. When Marv Wolfman gets hired to write a comic book, that's pretty big, guys. Marv Wolfman wrote Crisis on Infinite Earths. This is a big deal. But so that happened. What I find interesting is what we don't know yet. If you watch the cinematic, I believe Liz was asking at one point, she's like, who are the people in the cinematic? And I'm like, nobody. They're a bunch of nobodies.
Bunch You've of random people, yeah.
A bunch of dungeon crawlers. And the triune that they're talking about, the three, that's Diablo, Mephisto, and Baal. That's mm-hmm. interesting for a lot of reasons, which we will come back on, I promise. Obviously, Lilith is the main figure that gets summoned. You see that in the cinematic. Lilith gets pulled through. What's interesting there is where Lilith was. Lilith was banished by Anarius, and he actually did it twice.
I have a question because I was watching all of that. Wasn't that the church that Tyrael plunged? Wasn't that the big hole in the ground in the? No,
I don't believe so. No. I do not believe that was Tristram Cathedral. I do not think so.
Okay.
For a lot of reasons. One of the reasons is that, we've been through Tristram Cathedral several times. Secondly, this game seems pretty heavily centered over on the other side of the continent.
Yeah. Well, that's why I was kind of confused with it, because like I said, from the cinematic, the first thing that they showed was that wreck of a cathedral, and I'm like, is this Tristram? And then that showed the hole in the floor, and I'm like, is that where Tyrael fell through? Is that where we're at here? But I didn't think so. Anyway,
no, I don't believe that's it. I believe it was just an old church that was built on top of.
Because God knows they have enough of those around. Yeah. Sanctuary. Yeah. Go for
it. Is it possible it links back to the Sin War and the church that her brother was in charge of?
It is in fact possible. In fact, I think it's highly likely.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that was the Church of the Three, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Church of the Triune.
Triune, yeah.
We know the Church of the Triune actually links into the modern day, because both Adria and Magda were part of a sect that derived from the Church of the Triune.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The cult that Magda was in charge of was a descendant of the Church of the Triune. And the Church of the Triune was basically set up by Diablo, Mephisto, and Baal. And they came up with different names for the three of them, which I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm sorry. I would have to go look them up. But I think it's something like Har Mephiston and Diaboros or something.
Yeah, they were close. They were close enough.
It was like code names that weren't really I'm air quoting code names because they were really obvious. But yeah.
But the Church of Triune was basically Inarius's great rival during the time of the Sin War. Inarius, because remember, Inarius. There's a bit of a misnomer in all of this. They keep calling Lilith the creator. And while she was certainly instrumental in the creation of Sanctuary, technically speaking, Inarius created Sanctuary. Because Inarius was the one who attuned to the World Stone and used the World Stone to make Sanctuary in the first place. And in fact, that's the only reason that Lilith ended up getting stopped in the first place, because he used the World Stone against her.
I think if you were going to call her the creator of anything, you'd call her the creator of the Nephilim. But honestly,
and
she was
through them, humanity.
Half, yeah, yeah, she was kind of half that. So
the thing is that it's accurate in a metatextual sense, because everything that happened was along a plan that she had. When Inarius and Lilith met, What happened was Inarius, there's some debate. Sometimes he's called an archangel. Sometimes he's just called an angel. He was directly in service to Tyriel, and he was an advisor to the Injurious Council. But whether or not he was actually an archangel, it depends on the source material you're looking at. But
so he wasn't actually on the council.
He was not on the council.
Okay.
But he was very well known. He was extremely well placed in the heavens. And when he came up to the idea that, you know, the eternal conflict was wrong, he didn't just think it was wrong because he was stuck in it. He thought it was unjust. And he tried to convince Tyriel that it was unjust. He went to Tyriel and said, this endless conflict serves no one. It's not just. And Tyriel was like, it's just to destroy evil. So he didn't agree, and he couldn't get Tyriel to agree. So he was like, okay, he despaired of being able to convince any of the angels. When he led a sortie out, he got captured by the host of hell. He woke up in chains ranting about how sick he was of the eternal conflict. And it was Lilith who had him in chains. She'd had him brought to her, and she let him go. And when that happened,
because she was listening to the ranting. And
there's a thing about when they first met, she had been tired of the war for quite some time. She thought it was stupid. She thought, you know, her father was an idiot who was never going to understand that they couldn't win. And why do it if you can't win? If there's no point to this, why are we doing it? And, you know, to them, you know, evil and suffering was its own reward. You know, he was hatred. Mephisto is hatred. He hated the angels and wanted to destroy them. It didn't matter to him that they couldn't be a victor. But to Lilith, victory was all important. There was no point in fighting if you couldn't win. And if you ever go and look at the things, like if you play through Diablo 3 in particular, Reaper of Souls, if you look at the book, the various books dropped throughout the Pandemonium Fortress, one always comes to mind to me is when Lilith is writing. Lilith writes this. It's, Inarius and I stole the World Stone, and now we have a group of renegades to follow us. I have created a new world where we can live in peace, a place of infinite possibilities. Inarius believes that escape is enough. In time, I will show him that even victory is possible. But first, I will give him children. And what's interesting about that is, first up, that means even though Inarius is the one who used the World Stone, it was all a design that Lilith had from the beginning. And she wanted the World Stone to create sanctuary, not as a hiding place like Inarius did, but as a place of infinite possibilities. Only in a place created by and supported by the World Stone could the Nephilim happen. Because keep in mind, angels and demons have been running into each other for countless eons in their war, and there were never Nephilim before. And not to put too dark a point on it, but you're going to tell me demons didn't do horrible things to angels when they caught them from time to time?
I mean, we know they did.
And so, there weren't any children.
There were no children.
Of any of that.
Nothing came before Sanctuary. Sanctuary, because it was created by the World Stone, which is the Eye of Anu. The Eye of Anu is the last remaining piece of Anu from the conflict between Anu and Tathamet. It's the Tathamet's corpse created the demons. The spine, the crystal spine, created the angels. But the Eye predates both. The Eye is a piece of the primordial Anu. It's both. And And as a result of that, only in a place that was created through that thing's power could the Nephilim happen. Because the Nephilim are effectively the reunion of Anu. They have angel and demon in them. They have both. And as a result, they're perfect for her plan, whatever her plan is. And that's the thing. We don't know what she means by victory is possible. And we never have. We've never understood Lilith's
plan. Like,
did
she mean to destroy, or does she mean to, like, foster the second coming of Anu? What is she doing?
We have no idea what Lilith's plan actually is. And that leads into the one question people keep asking over and over again and debating. Who is that who helps bring Lilith through?
A bunch of people were saying Rathma at the beginning of it, but then they retracted that and said, no, wait, there's not enough evidence to support that that's Rathma. And I don't think it is, because why would he free Lilith?
Yeah, there's no, I don't think there would be, and I said this before, and
for people wondering who Rathma is, he's a character from the Sin War novels, and you should absolutely read those if you get a chance.
He's also one of the first Nephilim.
Yes.
He is the first Nephilim.
Yeah.
He's Lilith's son.
He is Lilith and Inarius' son. And here's the thing. It absolutely could be Rathma if, and only if, he believed that it was the best thing for the balance to bring Lilith back.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is the only reason, because Rathma turned on both his parents. He was like, no, I, both of you are wrong. Both of, you know, the sanctuary itself is my world. I was born here. I am of here. This place and I share a balance. And keep in mind, Rathma, a.k.a. Linarian, and he's named Linarian because he's literally the composite of his two parents. So he starts L for Lilith, Inari for Inarius, and then Ian, that's the junction of the two. When he was created, when he was born, he went into the deep places of the earth and he communed with it. He communed with Sanctuary itself, not the World Stone, not his parents, not the heavens or the hells. He communed with Sanctuary, and through that, he touched onto Tra'Ghul, the dragon of the balance.
And they
became... We don't know nothing about Tra'Ghul. We don't know what it is how it exists.
The thing is that Rathma wasn't exactly wrong there either, because Inarius and Lilith represent two sides of a coin, and Rathma is the coin. Sanctuary is the coin.
Mm-hmm. And Sanctuary is effectively, if you're looking for his sibling, his first sibling is Sanctuary.
Yeah.
The world is his sibling. So would he bring Lilith back? Not unless he believed it was in the nature, it was in the best interest of the balance. But if he believed that, he could do anything. Because Rathma has no scruples.
Mm-hmm. No.
Rathma has no, there's nothing Rathma won't do. If you go and read the Sin War, you can see what he does there. The thing is that he's very much, I don't want to say servant of, because he doesn't serve Tra'Ghul, but he studied at Tra'Ghul's feet, and he's to the point where the priests of Rathma see Rathma as a dragon, not as a person.
He's kind of like the speaker of the world.
Yeah.
That was, what, Scales of the Serpent?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a whole... So it could be Rathma. It is possible that it's Rathma. For now, I don't think it is, until we get more that tells us what the motivation of this thing is.
Boy, I tell you what, though, that cinematic was good. Oh, yeah.
But one of the things that I am thinking about, there's somebody else who's a good candidate for who might be doing this.
Oh, yeah?
And it's someone I don't think people are thinking about too much, because they kind of forgotten what happened to him. When the Sin War ended, and Lilith had been banished by Inarius. Remember that, by Inarius,
mm-hmm.
using the World Stone. The angels and the demons came together and had their little conclave about what was going to happen to Sanctuary. The angels voted on destroying it. Destruction ended up not passing because of Tyrael. So they weren't going to destroy the world, no matter what Imperius thought. So that was there. But then they had the problem of what to do with the demons. The demons had their own plans for Sanctuary, and the angels had no interest in letting them have them. And basically, it came down to the angels made it clear that they would bring the war there before they let the demons have Sanctuary and the souls in it. The demons were like, all right, that doesn't really suit our purposes either, but I want my daughter back, comes from Mephisto. And the angels were like, we have no power to give her to you. You know, she was banished using the World Stone. The World Stone is tied to this world. We can't give it to you without destroying this world. We just said we're not going to destroy this world. So if you try and take it, we're going to be fighting again. And keep in mind, the entire time the World Stone had been stolen, the Eternal Conflict had kind of gone to a Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
It had been a hot war for eons, but it had gone to a Cold War. And that suited both sides. So the demons were like, okay.
They didn't have anything to fight over.
Yeah, with the World Stone locked in the world and with them not able to access it, why fight? So the demons were like, okay, they were already coming up with a new plan that'll come into being later. But Mephisto was like, okay, then I want Inarius. And that was the price that the angels paid. That was mm-hmm. the thing they gave up to seal the pact. And that's the thing. Remember when Tyrael starts the Haradrim? That's in defiance of this pact, because he knew, he could smell that the demons were already plotting something. He was like, yeah, I don't trust these guys. So he let them take Inarius, but he started the Haradrim to watch them. And they took Inarius to hell. And Mephisto has been torturing him right up until the Dark Exile, when now Mephisto is off on Sanctuary as part of the Dark Exile. And that's the last we hear about what happened to Inarius. We don't know what happened to him. We know that the demons can twist an angel into a monstrosity that is very much like a demon, because we know what happened to Izual. That's exactly what happened to Izual, who is one of Tyrael's servants. What do you think they did to Tyrael's best friend?
I mean,
that they had for much longer.
They also show in that cinematic, and this is a scene that we keyed off of, and that it's very quick, but they do show what looks like an apt description of, in the books, what happened to an Arius in hell. Like, it's the wrapped in chains, the wings ripped off, the flesh being pierced, that whole thing. So it's possible, but it's also, I mean...
Well, plus there's also, if you'll notice that if you looked at the Diablo 3 packet people got when they did the special order, the art book, one of the pieces of art is a kind of triptych that has Inarius and Lilith giving birth to the Nephilim. And obviously Inarius is in full angelic raiment there. But that piece of art, he's right next to her in it. He's right there. It doesn't ignore him or his role. He's right there in the art. So I am not saying that that was Inarius either. I'm saying that he is a candidate.
What if it's, and this is something I've been kicking around, one of the things we know that happened at the end of Diablo 3 was when the Soulstone was shattered, all of the prime evils are back. And we know that that's confirmation. We've seen that through the gameplay and some of the panels and things like that. What if that dude was Mephiston getting his daughter back?
See, now I've thought about that, but I don't know that he wants to do that. And he looked more like Baal, for that matter.
He did.
If you remember Baal with his skull when he was in the mortal body, Tarasha. So, but I've thought about whether or not it's Mephisto, and there is a certain amount.
If
here's
it
the thing.
If it were Baal, why would he be getting Lilith? What does he want from Mephisto?
That makes no sense. It's true. And if it was Mephisto, it would make sense. But here's the thing. As much as he evokes the triune, and they are, all three of them are invoked, it was Inarius who sealed her.
Right.
Using the World Stone.
But the World Stone's gone now.
But Inarius had its power. For thousands of years, he was in touch with it. He's the one that sealed it. He makes the most sense for the one who unlocked it. Now, I'm not saying it's him. There are still other possibilities. And the one you're coming up with Mephisto, that's a good possibility. The thing is that why are the Triune involved at all?
Why she is she locked she up? Why are they summoning her there?
Yeah. Well, more importantly, too, she was in open rebellion against them. Like, her entire plan is to win the eternal conflict, and they're part of it. They're going to get won over. They're the people who she's going to get victory over. She says as much. One of the things she says, my father is content to fight the same battles and the same foes while everything, you know, turns to ashes. Though his victories might last a day or a year or 100 years, the war will never be won so long as he and his brothers lead. There is an end to it. But fools like my father are too blind to see it.
Yeah.
Lilith has no loyalty to the Triune, the Prime Three, the Great Evils. She has no loyalty to them.
So they must have gotten, wherever she was banished to, wherever she was locked up, they must have gotten access to it, maybe?
Or gotten it out of Inarius, because he knows
that's
where
the
she
thing.
Is.
Yeah, they had Inarius this whole time. They were torturing him. It's interesting that this place
No,
even
I mean
exists.
The Triune. Maybe the Triune figured out where she had been banished away to, and they got access to her.
Maybe, but again, you come back to the same thing. Why?
Yeah.
And that's...
The only... Sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, the only other person that I even thought of, but like it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, would have been Lucian. But, you know, her brother, but he was winked out of existence by Eudician.
Yeah, and then the World Stone was destroyed.
Yeah.
There's the interesting thing is... There's several pieces to this puzzle we don't quite know yet. We don't know why the angels decided to bamf out and lock the door. I mean, we know that a lot of bad stuff happened to the heavens, but we don't know why they just said, we're out, and closed the door, and they're not talking to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first one. We don't know what happened to the Nephilim from Diablo 3.
Yeah.
We have no idea what that person is doing. There's no canonical who the Nephilim even was. And that's something that keeps coming into my head. Because of all the current living people on Sanctuary, the Nephilim is a possible candidate here. They've dealt with the forces of heaven and hell. They would view Lilith as their mother, as much as anybody's their mother, because Lilith created their species.
And they have enough power now.
Well, they also spent a lot of time in Diablo 3, especially after the expansion and the inclusion of the Necromancer, learning about the balance and preservation.
And they witnessed both the demons and the angels treating humans like disposable nothing.
Yeah, like, just look at Westmarch. Look what happened there.
Yeah. And the world of Diablo 4 is in terrible shape because of both the angels and the demons. There's no disputing this. The outside forces that Lilith wanted to win against are the enemies of mankind. They've destroyed the world. They've killed countless thousands. They've destabilized nations. The Church of Sakharum went from a world-spanning power to barely able to hold on to a few cities. You know, people are going to turn to the Church of the Triune.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot going on here that we only just barely see. But those are characters I think we should be watching out for. We should be watching out for the canonical Nephilim, whoever it is. We should be watching out for Inarius. We should be watching out for Rathma. Absolutely. And the other ancients might be playing a role in this because the Druids are back.
Yeah.
Who do the Druids serve? Fiacla Giar, brother of Bulkathos. With, you know, Barbarian and Druid are two playable groups in this expansion. That means we have to wonder if Bulkathos and Fiacla Giar are getting involved. And if so, why are they getting involved? Are they getting involved because Rathma's off the rails? Has their older quote-unquote brother thrown himself in with their mother? And they're like, oh no, that's not good. We don't know. We don't know what's going on yet.
Now, played the demo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did it say at any point in the demo, are you one of the Nephilim, like the Nephilim that handled everything, or no? It doesn't say?
Doesn't say.
Ooh.
Doesn't say anything about that. I mean, you've got power. I mean, you're doing all sorts of cool, you know, moves if you're the Druid.
Obviously,
like,
but it's more like me asking, were you the Nephilim from Diablo 3?
You're absolutely not, as far as I can tell.
Okay.
You are, for one thing, you can be like, you know, very different than the two possible options for every class. Remember,
and
every class
you can
had
be,
two possible options.
Yeah, and also you can be a Druid, and Druids were not a thing in Diablo 3. So,
and for that matter, the Sorceress is not the same as the Wizard.
No.
Mm-hmm.
The Sorceress that you play in the Diablo 4 beta, that harkens much, 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 much more like Diablo 2. In fact, they all feel more like Diablo 2 than Diablo 3 in that way. And that's interesting to me because it does imply that if they're, you know, with the Worldstone gone, the Nephilim are possible again, but it doesn't seem like they're happening with great frequency.
And also,
that could be for a lot of reasons.
But I was going to say, it would also make sense that the Nephilim from Diablo 2 are making a comeback, especially with the way things were kind of set up in 3.
Well, keep in mind, there were no Nephilim in Diablo 2.
Fair. The heroes.
Yeah, if you're playing the characters from Diablo 2, if it doesn't feel like you are any of those characters, like it doesn't feel like this is the same.
Are you maybe a descendant?
But what I'm,
that's
what I was getting.
Here's the thing. The amount of years is at least 50 between Diablo 2 and Diablo 4. Cause it's like 30 years after Diablo 4. I mean, 3. Yeah.
So what I was getting at with that is I think that these are disciples of whatever was set up, because especially with the Druid cinematic, with what they show, he's putting somebody to rest. He's at a gravesite. That's his teacher. And if I remember my Diablo 2 lore at all, it was always student teacher passing on 1-to-1-to-1-to-1. So it seems like a continuation of that line there, at least to me, in what they've presented so far. Don't know if that's the case, but it would also stand a reason
that that doesn't work for everybody. It might work for the Druid. That doesn't work for the Barbarian.
Sure. Well, those are clan stuff, and they've established that there's like a clan heritage there, right? Like we've seen that in Diablo 3.
One of the things I actually really liked about this, if you looked at the playable characters and the possible lore implication, is that they've bumped up the diversity of the Barbarians. Like, there are Barbarians of pretty much every racial group. So it feels like the Barbarians went out into the world and just started making new lives and new families. But again, this is all stuff that has not actually been established yet. What we do know is things are getting bad.
Yeah.
There are things that have been forgotten or almost forgotten for centuries that are coming back, like the Drowned. The world is in terrible shape. There are giant monsters wandering it. Kingdoms that once held half the continent don't even have the ability to hold much more than a couple cities anymore. And that's the case pretty much everywhere. Like the area of the map that's being dealt with in this game is about half the continent of Sanctuary. And it's all in chaos. From Skazglen straight down to Khajistan, the whole place is a mess. And that could be a reason why Rathma would bring Lilith back. If you looked at the world and said, this place, you can't have balance if everything's in chaos all the time. Mother might be cruel and insane, but she'll impose order. And that will help us balance it. I could see him bringing her back for that reason. That doesn't mean it is the reason. It just means it is a possibility. So you can't count Rathma out. But it could also be somebody we've never heard of or seen before.
There's also the possibility that Rathma has witnessed what the world was like without Inarius and Lilith in the picture.
Yeah, and for that matter, the fact that Inarius is in that art piece that mm-hmm. from the Art of Diablo book means that he might be coming back too. Just because we don't see him in this cinematic doesn't mean he isn't.
Lilith might be the first step, and Inarius might be the second. Because the thing is like I said, we've witnessed what the world is like without them, and it is chaos, and it has fallen apart, and all of this terrible stuff has happened. Maybe Rathma saw all of that and said, you know what? Maybe we do need the two sides of the coin to keep that coin balanced.
And I think it's interesting, going back to the classes a little bit too, the sorceress, the druid, and the barbarian, because these are three classes that are, and we can throw the necromancer in there. They're three classes, three schools of thought that are very tied to the natural elements of Sanctuary.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at the clan of Zanesu, which is where the sorceresses are said to have come from Diablo 2, they're all about elemental magic. And you look at the druids, they're all about the natural order of, you know, sort of that preserving life. Then you have the necromancers preserving the balance, and they're all tied to Sanctuary very, very intrinsically.
And the barbarians are the descendants of the people who are supposed to keep the world stone safe.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we already know that the barbarians are tied to the earth, like, their powers and stuff as well, right?
And it's interesting to think about that, because the World Stone was destroyed. Essentially, they have to move from the Protectors to the Avengers.
Yep.
They have to avenge Sanctuary because they can't protect it anymore.
I have a question for you, Rossi. Given all of this, what we've just discussed as far as like the three races that have been introduced are all very connected to Sanctuary in an intrinsic kind of way. If that's the case, and that's the direction that they're going, then what would the other two logical classes be?
I would be really surprised if the Necromancer doesn't come back.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind if they didn't come back, but I would be very much surprised.
It feels like they should be there, but what's that other one?
I have a...
Because now I'm bonus. Saying, now I'm thinking Demon Hunter might not actually be the fit that we thought it would be.
See, the thing is the Demon Hunter works if you're thinking about trying to keep the demons from destroying the world, which True. Is certainly the balanced thing. But just because Demon Hunters hunt demons doesn't mean they can't also hunt angels.
Yeah.
Then they don't really have to hunt the angels because the angels have hidden themselves. I don't know. Demon Hunter is one that I keep thinking back on, but one possibility that keeps occurring to me is that it doesn't have to all be classes we've seen before. Just because we've gotten three that we've seen before doesn't mean they'll all be ones we've seen before. And for that matter, I mean, one of the things that comes to mind when I keep looking at this is the Paladin / Crusader.
Yeah.
You know, you could get one or both of those. You could have the two of them in one class.
I was gonna bring that up. Like, having the Church of Zakharum come back in a big way would make sense here.
That's another connection.
One of the things that you get in, I think, the Book of Tyriel is Deckard Cain musing that the Church of Zakharum comes out of a misunderstanding. That when, and I can't remember his name, I'm sorry for that, but when the first person who founded Zakharum saw the figure in light, he wasn't seeing an angel, and he wasn't seeing what he thought he was seeing. He was seeing Odyssean sacrifice, because Odyssean sacrificed not just his life, but his nature.
Everything that he was.
Everything that he was, to the point where no one remembers him.
Yeah.
He went and actually reattuned the World Stone, because the thing Lilith did that made the Sin War possible was she was banished by the World Stone's power. But over the course of centuries, she managed to return. And she managed, because of her intimate knowledge of the World Stone, she managed to twist it so that the Nephilim could be born again. Mm-hmm. And that's how Odyssean became a Nephilim. He was able to tap the power because Lilith set it up. And Lilith is right there when Odyssean first starts using the power. Yep. She's disguised, but she's right there with him, nurturing him, urging him on, telling him to do things. And it's actually Rathma who helps stop it by teaching Odyssean's brother Mendelm. And that's why Mendelm is the one who actually founded the Priests of Rathma.
Mm-hmm. We keep going back to Rathma, which is why I'm like, was that too much of a jump? Or is that... I don't know if the developers said, nope, that's not Rathma, or
they've said nothing. They have not spoken on it.
Or if somebody said, you know what, that's too much of a jump to make here, we can't assume that because there's not enough evidence there to support it.
That's where we are right now, is people are like, people jump the gun on that. But getting back to the whole thing with Zakharum, if it was the old sacrifice of Odyssean that they saw, then that means the priesthood of Zakharum is ultimately praying to Anu. And mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to something I wrote a What Is Tra'Gul post a long time ago. Because here's the thing. What is this freaking dragon that just shows up and tells people, I'm the Dragon of Balance? What is that creature? Where does it come from? Why is it a dragon? It's real. It taught both Rathma and Mendeln. It created the Priests of Rathma, essentially, by teaching the secrets of balance to these people. What is it? Why is there a dragon teaching necromancy to people to retain the balance of Sanctuary? Where does it come from? Why doesn't it seem to fight in the war at all or have anything to do with it? And then I'm going to think about this. Why is it that when Anu pulled all of the evil and foulness and corruption out of itself to purify itself, why did it create a dragon? Because Tathamet was a dragon.
Wasn't it
a dragon?
Didn't they used to refer, like, I remember an old BlizzCon, I think it was like, had to be almost 10 years ago now, like 2010, 2011, that like one of the Diablo like lore things, they talked about Tra'Gul being Tathamet's brother, and that makes, I don't know where that came from.
I don't know. That's not something I've ever seen, but it is kind of along the lines of where I'm going with this. Because here's the thing. What happens to perfection when it dies?
Good question.
Anu split itself off into two beings, both of which then died.
Mm-hmm.
But they created the cosmos in dying. And then there's this thing, this dragon of balance that's just there. What is it? Where does it come from?
Do you think it's like baby Anu?
I think it's baby
composite or whatever.
No, I think it's dead Anu. I think when Anu died, its death meant something. It learned, oh, this is what before I was all things, so I was nothing. I was, perfection, therefore I contained everything, therefore there was no way to determine what I was. I was all possibilities, therefore I was no possibilities, because without distinction you can't have possibilities.
Right.
It's a very Gnostic idea. And when you come down to it, I think Tra'Gul is what you get when you go through that, when you finally realize, okay, I do need both sides. I need all the things that made up Tathamet, and I need all the things that made up Anu. I need to be both.
Yeah, because it has the knowledge it needed. Now it has...
Sanctuary was created by the Eye of Anu. It was created by the World Stone. It is the only real place.
Yeah.
It is all things.
Yeah. Pandemonium isn't real. It isn't a place. It's constantly shifting. It has no form or function. The war just never ends there. And the things that fight that war are the maggots that come out of the corpse of Tathamet and the screams that are born out of the crystal spine. The angels are effectively the divine harmony, the music that makes them all up, is the death scream of Anu. They are a funeral dirge. That's why they're no more capable of ending the war than the demons are.
Which is kind of creepy when you think about it, but I mean,
when you
Diablo.
Think about this, then you think about Lilith. Lilith may be the only one who saw this.
Yeah.
Who saw that there's a way to win. The only winning move is not to play.
And she thought Inarius saw it too.
And maybe he did, but he's a creature of order. She's a creature of chaos. And the thing is I honestly believe they've never, ever said she was using him. She may have been manipulative, but they never ever. They say up and over and over again that they fell in love.
Yeah, they make that a point.
Now, it doesn't mean they're still in love. Love ends, people break up. But it's interesting to think about this concept that, she was being as straight with him as she knew how. And he was doing what he could, the best he could. And they just didn't work because they were at the end, an angel and a demon. And only through Rathma, only through Lunarian, could you get anything close to balance. And then the World Stone's gone. The World Stone's gone. What does that mean? What does it mean for Tra'Gul? Is Tra'Gul still there? What if Tra'Gul was just the World Stone? Because remember, he didn't contact Tra'Gul.
That was my other question was, do you think that Tra'Gul is something that we're going to encounter in the course of Diablo 4? Because that's an important plot point. That
it is. I have no idea if we're going to run into him. That's one of the things I've been thinking about a lot, though, is like you have Sanctuary, the world. It's the thing he went to commune with, and he comes upon Tra'Gul. And Tra'Gul comes up again in the Sin War when he takes Mendeln as a student, mm-hmm. and they found the Priests of Rathma. And they're always the balance is always there. If the World Stone was Tra'Gul, the World Stone would be like the only remnant of Anu, and if it manifests as Tra'Gul, the Dragon of the Balance. When it was destroyed, that power was freed back to go back into the Sanctuary. back into the world to create Nephilim again, because that's what Nephilim were. They were the infinite possibilities of Sanctuary. So there's a lot here we don't know yet, but I do think there's stuff that needs to be answered for us to really know what's exactly going on. That could be Mendelm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know? Yeah. Yep.
He was the brother of Odysseus, so he's a Nephilim. He was the founder of the Priests of Rothma. It could be him doing it.
It doesn't necessarily need to be Rothma.
Yeah, we don't know. It could be, you know, I do think that we should not count Lucien out just yet. Because the Church of the Triune was his deal.
Yeah, and even with him going away with the shattering of the World Stone, we don't know what happened with that. We also don't know what happened, like, if there was any points of reset, right?
Yeah, we have no idea. Because a lot of that stuff, and the other thing is, when the breaking of the World Stone, we know that the primes, the greater and lesser evils, are loose, but we don't know if they're all back.
No. Fully formed, yeah.
Yeah, they could just be floating off in wherever.
We know that one of them is going to be in this game. Duriel, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that certainly implies that the others will be back as well, at least some of them. The Triune... The fact that they're
I don't think they're going to bring all of them back. I think that they're going to bring them back like a few at a time, because that will allow them to keep making, you know, come out with Diablo 5, come out with Diablo 6, whatever.
Or, you know, for that matter, an expansion, much like they use Baal as the main boss. There's a ton we don't know, but I do know this much. I feel like with Lilith established as a major force in this expansion, what we're seeing is only going to be part of the whole, because Lilith had this whole plan for the Nephilim that was so important to her. She destroyed the other renegades, not just renegade angels,
no,
renegade demons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She wiped them all out. And she did that without the World Stone. So the only reason, you know, Inarius managed to stop her using the World Stone. If he hadn't had it, we don't know that he could have stopped her.
I don't think he could have. Lilith is a phenomenally powerful character, and I mean, we've never really encountered her in present day, so people don't quite get it, but I would put her, if we wanted to put it kind of like in World of Warcraft terms, I would put her above Azshara in the rank of powerful people.
It's very hard to like come up with exactly how powerful she is, but the thing is that ultimately we're only seeing the very, very, very tiniest beginnings. We know that she's back. We know that it's somehow related to the Triune in some way. It's possible, quite frankly, that the use of the Triune ritual is because she's expected to help them rather than the other way around.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that too.
Because keep in mind, they might not even be in a position to do anything. Wow, we've been talking about this all game.
I know, but we're okay. We're talking about this because, like I said, we didn't talk about it last week, and we barely. It's rare that we talk about Diablo lore on Lore Watch, but it's one of those things where it is a very lore heavy game, and I do really enjoy the discussion surrounding it. Particularly because the lore for it is so deep. There are a lot of books out there, folks. And again, if you haven't read the Sin War trilogy, I would recommend, if you want to know more about what's going on in Diablo 4, the Sin War trilogy is a really good place to start. It's written by Richard Knack, so if you're familiar with his World of Warcraft works, or even his Dragonlance. His Dragonlance novels. It's along those lines. It's very well written. I like it a lot. Honestly, I like his Diablo books a lot more than I like his WoW books. There are a few WoW books that stick out in my head that I really enjoy, but he has a really good grasp of Diablo. And
he does Grimdark well.
Yeah, he does Grimdark very, very well. So it's like a really good series to pick up if you're looking for some kind of backstory or something to kind of latch on to so that you understand things going into Diablo 4 a little more. Rossi, what I wanted to ask you, though, because we are kind of... we're running low-ish on time here, but not necessarily completely out. You played through, obviously, the Diablo 4 demo, and you played through it multiple times over. Was there lore involved? Was there story involved with what you played through, and what was in there?
The first thing is you find your character literally in a crypt. That's where you start.
Okay.
And you find a lantern that has been buried with someone.
And does this matter is what class you play, or is it every class?
No, all three.
Okay.
It's exactly the same.
All right, go ahead.
This is your level and 20 folks, when you start, so I'm assuming stuff has happened.
Folks, this may be kind of like into spoiler territory, so if you're wanting to avoid Diablo for spoilers, maybe go ahead and cut out here and we'll see you next week. But if you're interested, I'm really interested in what exactly was there in that demo, because there's going to be story involved. So go ahead, Rossi.
You go through and you get this lantern that the headman and the hetman of this local village, and it's not a guy, it's a woman, she's the chief, sends you to get. You get it and you escape after fighting your way through a bunch of, you know, the Walking Dead. You fight your way to an exit. You go through a passage where you look down at your own reflection and, you know, a horrible skull face comes up out of the reflection and, you know, you're like, ah, and then everything collapses. And you get out of you literally force your way out of the ground to get up. You push your way out of being buried alive and you head back into town with the lantern. And the chief is like, my son is still having those horrible dreams. And you go in and the kid is screaming, I have to go. I have to go. And you're like, you know, keep your kid here. I'll go. I'll take the lantern and I'll go and I'll figure out what's going on. And you go and you're wandering your way through the land to go to this other buried place, because, you know, of course, it's another buried place. It's never going to be out in the day. And you find this ghost that's escorting alongside his father. And they're going into this crypt that you're going into. And you go in, and as you follow through, you find out that in the past, there was this horrible witch in this place. And the kid's like, you're going to slay the witch? And he goes, I'm going to do what has to be done. And you get to a certain point and he's like, Father, you sure you have enough to do this? And he goes, yes, my son, I'm afraid that I have exactly enough to do this. And he kicks his son off the ledge and into the cavern and screams out, you know, I have made the pact. I've sealed the bargain. Fish for my people for all of my life. And you realize that the creatures in this cavern want a sacrifice. That's why they're trying to pull the kid to them through horrible dreams. They want a sacrifice because in the past, this pact was made in this village.
They want another kid.
Yeah. So you go down and you kill this monster, of course, and you go back to town and you're like, I did it. The witch was there. I killed it. And as soon as you say that, the kid screams and dies. And that's the end of the quest.
Ooh.
Yeah. So does that directly tie into anything? I have no idea. It's just one quest chain that you manage to do in the 10 minutes that you're given. Some people got to play this game a lot more. Some people streamed it for a few hours, and I'm sure they got further. But with the 10 minutes that I had, that's what I got to do.
They did say that it wasn't going to be the same kind of on-the-rails narrative as Diablo 3 was, that there was going to be a lot of...
That seems pretty well supported, because one of my playthroughs, I didn't bother to go to the town.
You just went elsewhere?
I just explored around. There's quite a bit to explore around. I ended up finding like several events I could do. They seem to be randomly spaced around the area.
Mm-hmm.
And the area map seems to change a bit, like from time to time. Like I didn't feel like it was exactly the same map. It had the same go north and you'll hit the town and you can just turn in the lantern thing. But if you don't want to do that, you seem to be able to explore around. What I noticed from the storytelling of the demo, what I really noticed when I was playing through it is that there is certainly a sense of, even in victory, you can be defeated. Like I said, you kill the witch and get back to town and that kid still dies. It's almost like what you did didn't really matter. And that's a sense of futility that I haven't had in the Diablo game since Diablo, like the original Diablo.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I want it in huge amounts. I like actually getting to do things, but it was an interesting and dark perspective that I had not seen in a Diablo game in quite some time. Diablo 2 didn't have this, for all that it was pretty dark, but it's still, the Diablo 2 darkness is happening to the hero of Diablo, the original Diablo. It's not happening to your character.
Yeah,
this was the first time in a long time that I've done a quest and come back and it was like, yeah, good job, he dies anyway. And that was interesting. Whether or not, like, there's definitely a sense of that what's going on is the world itself is sick. And that's like, if you guys, Joe mentioned this, the cinematic where the guy's talking to the grave and, you know, he's saying, you know, I smell it. The demons are returning. There's a sense that the entire world is sick. And it's interesting to think about the return of Lilith might be the cause, or it might be the symptom, or it might even be an attempt at a cure.
Yeah, I was going to say it could be part of an inoculation attempt.
There's a lot going on here that's.
Well, it was like I was saying earlier, you know, maybe Rathma or the priests of Rathma or Tragul or somebody said the world is ill, and maybe the reason the world is ill is because mother and father aren't here.
It's out of balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been forming some questions in my head about some things coming up and wanted to get Rossi's take on them. I don't know if we have time.
Yeah, we do. Go ahead.
So the idea of balance and it being like what you said about Tragul, if it's what happens when the two sides of Anu die and then form back together and say, wow, we sort of messed up here. I messed up. Now I'm okay. I understand what needs to be done. Balance is what needs to be maintained. Do we think that there might be an endgame in which they try to collapse demons into angels to form the either the World Stone again or back to that sense of balance since they are technically part of Anu?
I don't know. That certainly is something I've thought about since the end of Reaper of Souls.
Because there's a lot of that in Reaper of Souls.
Mephisto basically breaks the Black Soul Stone, which you keep in mind, all the Soul Stones are pieces of the World Stone.
Mm-hmm.
They went and took pieces of the World Stone and made the Soul Stones out of them.
Yeah.
And that's also a big part of Diablo Immortal is that when the World Stone got destroyed, the fragments of it went everywhere. And there's even a reference to that in Diablo 3, well before Diablo Immortal was announced, about the Blood Stones, that they might be pieces of the World Stone. So I don't know if it's as simple as just trying to collapse demons and angels together again, because in a way, you don't need to, because you have humans.
Right.
And humans are that. But what you know, look at what Malfiel tried to do is simply kill all humans. But
he wanted to wipe the Nephilim out.
But if you were to, say, try to use all humans as a power source, and that's what the original Dark Exile was all about. That's what the demons wanted to do. That's what Diablo, Baal, and Mephisto wanted to do. They got themselves banished from hell so that they could get around the pact with heaven and operate unopposed on Sanctuary so that they could turn humanity into a power source. And that's the thing Malfiel reacted to. Malfiel was like, okay, maybe they're gone now, but as long as humanity exists, they're a threat. And Malfiel wanted to basically make sure, for all that he talked about winning the war once and for all, as long as the Black Soulstone existed, he knew he couldn't win it.
Yeah.
They'd just be trapped. They're not dead. So there's a lot to think about in terms of what exactly is the endgame here. Do you want, I don't think you can recreate the World Stone. And I don't know, is anybody, that's a thing to think about with Tragul and with the balance. Is that the goal, to recreate Anu?
Or is the goal to stabilize Sanctuary?
Maybe, yeah. But how do you stabilize Sanctuary?
Well, and that's,
here's the thing: when Aldissian was the Nephilim,
mm-hmm.
back in the Sin War, yeah. What did Aldissian do to stabilize everything? He reset the World Stone.
Right.
With the World Stone being gone, how do you fix that void?
That's kind of what I was getting at. Like, is there a way to do that?
Can another World Stone be created? But how? You know.
Well,
freaking Eye of Anu.
For that matter, I mean, you know, the Nephilim from the third game, for all we know, that's what they're doing. And they might actually just have gone to the Worldstone Chamber and plugged themselves in, because they'd be the closest thing.
They're a
functioning piece of both. There's a lot we still need to see and a lot we're guessing at. That is certainly something, though. Someone could be trying something, because Lilith understood this better than anybody. Lilith was the one who knew that the children could happen. She was the one that was her idea. There's, mm-hmm. Why was that her idea? She's the daughter of hatred. Why was she the one to fall in love? Is it because love and hate are basically, you know, related emotions? I mean,
different sides of the same coin.
And then we go back to balance again.
It's like passion, you know? I'm going to interrupt you because I want to make it a point to answer at least one email on this episode. And I'm going to try and do that with future episodes as well. Even if we don't get to like the entire list of emails, I want to at least pick out one that's kind of relevant. This one's half relevant because it was sent to us before BlizzCon, but I like the idea behind it anyway. This is from Durin Court, who we've answered questions from Durin Court before. He's a Paladin of the Silver Hand, US, who says, I've been playing through Diablo 3 this week on a Crusader, and as always, I can't help but wonder where Sanctuary would fit into World of Warcraft lore if Blizzard decided to merge them in canon. I like the idea that the Anael in Homeworld is the version of Sanctuary where Asmodan successfully became the Primeval. So with that in mind, if Blizzard tasked you with fitting Sanctuary into World of Warcraft lore, what would you do with it? Thanks a lot, Durin Court. Joe, I'm going to let you answer first.
Heck, I don't know.
Yeah?
Like, I don't know where I would fit it in. I don't know, like...
To me, it feels like I already see correlations there. And I mean, it could be because the world of Diablo and the lore behind Diablo and the lore behind World of Warcraft, they both come from the same guy. They were both, you know, jumped out of Chris Metzen's head. So maybe there were correlations there that he wasn't quite thinking of when he wrote it, but they just kind of popped up because you've got the idea of here are the Titans, here are the Void Lords, here's a world where both have come together in a way, Azeroth, and here are the creatures that are on Azeroth that are, you know, getting more and more powerful as time goes on because they've got this curse of flesh thing going on. So they're not just, you know, Titanforge now. They are something other, and they're trying to, like, protect the world, save the world, balance the world, what have you, whatever you want to call it. It feels like to me, conceptually speaking, there are already similarities. I don't know. What do you think, Rossi?
Oh, well, first, I'm going to say up front, Chris Metzen would be the first to tell you he didn't come up with Diablo.
Oh, he didn't come up with it entirely?
No, he didn't come up with it at all. The first two games are absolutely not. They were Blizzard North.
That was Bill Roper in them.
Yeah, okay, I thought he had fleshed out Diablo lore much like he fleshed out Warcraft lore, but I could be wrong. I'm sorry if I'm totally wrong.
No. Diablo and Diablo 2 are very much not Chris Metzen.
Okay.
Diablo 3 was somewhat Chris Metzen.
Okay.
But the real person behind it, there's actually a few people. One of them is Leonard Boyarsky.
Okay.
And if you know who that is, you know that because he was one of the original people on the Fallout games.
Yeah.
And he came to Blizzard and he fleshed out Diablo 3, and then he went to Obsidian where he just got done making the Outer Worlds.
Yep. Okay. So, pardon me, and I apologize for the mistake. And if Metzen is listening to this, sorry, dude. I just think you're really talented, and sorry to the other guys.
you can see certain amount of influence from Chris Metzen in that Chris Metzen is very much somebody who is pretty understands a lot about mysticism, and you can see it in his Gnosticism gets into this stuff. You can see that in Diablo. That's absolutely there.
But, I mean, my understanding after, like, when I mentioned this last time. Years ago, when I interviewed Bill Roper, they all played like D&D and crap together. So, like,
oh yeah,
so they all had influence on each other's storytelling.
But in terms of one of the things that you could think of, if you wanted to make it fit, if you're trying to make Sanctuary fit into World of Warcraft rather than melding the two, if you're trying to make the one fit into the other, you basically just have Anarius be a Titan, you have Lilith be a member of the Legion, and the two of them got together and created a world. And that's what Sanctuary is. And you can make it...
And Tra'Gul is the world soul?
Yeah. It's just that there's ways to get around planet. It. That's the things you can do.
Tra'Gul would be the world soul, and Rathma would be the Magni to Tra'Gul, kind of.
Effectively. And he would also be like an actual, like, to be a Titanforged created to be part Fel.
Yeah.
Like, you know, to actually have the Fel energy inside of him. There's ways to do it. I've actually always wanted to do something else, though.
Yeah.
And just like me to take a question, then not answer it. but I've always wanted to see like a portal open and you can go from Azeroth to Sanctuary and they remain distinct and different. And so like you've got the various Diablo classes and the various WoW classes and they don't mix exactly. You just, the magic that works in Sanctuary doesn't necessarily work in Azeroth and vice versa. So when your wizard goes to Azeroth, they have to kind of figure out how magic works there and so forth. And I've always thought that would be kind of cool to actually have and even like, maybe it even goes like when you go to Sanctuary, suddenly it's a third person isometric perspective for your character rather than just over the shoulder.
Oh.
And you, why do I only have four abilities? You
know? What happened here?
Yeah, and I always thought that would be kind of cool, just as a change of pace. And I mean,
you could look at Heroes of the Storm. It's kind of
Heroes of the Storm is kind of like that neat melding pot where all these different places can be their own thing and still coexist. But yeah, that's where I'll stop there, so you can talk.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up here, though, because we're kind of out of time. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. Final thoughts, you guys. I'm just going to frame one question here, and I'm going to let you guys answer it. Do you think we're going to be working with Lilith, or is she the big bad of Diablo 4. Rossi.
I think that both can be true because it's Lilith and she's quite capable of getting us to do her dirty work. And then later on, we'll be like, oh, we definitely shouldn't have done that. Because if there's one thing Blizzard games have taught me, it's that we do dumb things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And have to clean up after ourselves. But Lilith is too self-serving a character to be the good guy. Like, the best you get out of her is that she'd be the, like, the lesser of two evils safe situation, I think.
She wouldn't be the good guy. She'd be the not quite bad, bad guy.
Well, I don't want, you know, Diablo certainly isn't somebody I want to work with, whereas Lilith, at least, she made humanity, so there's a little something in there that, you know, wants us to be around more than
mommy,
in Diablo's case.
Mommy might not kill us. Diablo definitely will.
Yeah. Joe, what do you think? Same question.
I'm sort of in the Rossi boat on this one. I don't know, because she can definitely be both. I mean, if I had to pick one now, I'd say she's going to be both throughout the course of the campaign. Like, there's going to be a lot of storytelling here. There's going to be a lot of things that happen. I would not be surprised if she starts as the big bad, but then we wind up working alongside her because it's the best option, especially because they show us doing things like going after some of the other evils, like the Lord of Maggots. I that seems like that would align with her more than it would be against her.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if we'll be set up to be, because the cinematic, beautiful as it was, didn't really paint that picture either way, which is one of those things that I really appreciate about Diablo, is that there's not necessarily a force of good or a force of evil. Even the forces of good, even the angels, they've got things going for them that don't necessarily jive with humanity. Like the part where they don't really want us around and they think we're kind of lesser than and gross. Looking at you, Imperius. Anyway, so yeah, I think that's going to go ahead and wrap us up. Sorry, guys, this was totally a Diablo episode, but hey, we don't have those very often, so I was really excited and really happy that we got to get one of those. Rossi, thanks for chiming in with all of this Diablo lore. Joe, thanks for being here. You guys, thank you for listening, and we will see you again next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.